All right, welcome aboard. It is a Monday, and right off the bat, we're going to go right at it because it was a busy weekend, and for some of us, it was a fun weekend apparently because we got to go to Florida.
Oh, yeah,
hey,
how about that?
How are
not
you,
bad.
Matt Shook?
Not too bad. Although I will say that choosing August is maybe not the right month to head down to Florida, but you know, whenever I saw a couple of free days in the schedule, I grabbed it and saw a little Lakeland Flying Tigers action, although I actually didn't see it because they got rained out the night I was going to go, or the night that I went to one of the games, but did talk to some of the guys down there and saw some family and did a nice little quick summer trip.
Who are the guys there in Lakeland right now that are of interest?
It's pretty bleak, to be honest, but Cody Clemens is kind of the main one as a guy who's, you know, right around that number 10 prospect for the Tigers, depending on who you look at. He plays second base, youngest of four sons of Roger Clemens, and was a big star, Big 12 Conference Player of the Year. His last year for the Longhorns at Texas, took them to the College World Series, and then got drafted in the third round last year, and really went straight to West Michigan for the Midwest League, did great there, tore it up, and then did pretty well after a promotion to Lakeland after that at the end of last year. Now this year he's been not as good. He's been a bit of an average hitter. 11 home runs, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a lot for the Tigers organization, and also a lot considering that Lakeland's one of these spacious stadiums, and the Florida State League is a pretty good pitcher's league and has pretty low averages and pretty low home run output. So you got those guys. Brock Deathridge is another guy who's in Lakeland, center fielder, very speedy, who had a similar trajectory with Clemens where they were picked pretty highly. And he went out and played really well in West Michigan and Lakeland last year, and then is taking a little bit of a step back this year, struggling, but stealing a lot of bases, playing well defensively, and you know, trying to expand his game a little bit in those kind of areas. And you got some pitchers. You got Paul Rickon, who they just traded for with the Chicago Cubs. You got Angel DeJesus, our relief pitcher, who's adding some pitches there. And Will Vest is a guy who's having a lot of success as a relief pitcher in Lakeland. And then Ulrich Boyarski, who's the South African-born, Australian-raised corner outfielder who had a lot of pop this year in West Michigan. So, we're talking about fringy prospects at that point. But, yeah, Cody Clemens is kind of the biggest one to keep an eye on.
And he had a lot of home runs in college, especially his senior year. And I just, you know, I watch the Toronto Blue Jays, and I see Guerrero Jr., I see Biggio Jr., and I really, really, really want a Clemens to come in here and do something for the Tigers in a few years.
Yeah, and they got Bichette, too, and then they got...
I forgot about him. He's tearing up.
Yeah, Griffin Conine is the prospect for them, Jeff Conine's son. So, yeah, all sorts of names from the 90s and all that stuff there.
We get Cameron and Cody Clemens, and neither one of them can hit.
Yeah, and then Cam Gibson, throw him in there, too.
Where is he on the depth chart? Because from most people's lists, I don't even see him in the top 50.
No, he's kind of slid. He just hasn't really advanced offensively as they were hoping for. He's probably, fourth outfielder in Erie right now, basically, when you have guys like Ozokar and Derek Hill. Really had kind of started with a pretty good start there in West Michigan. I'm sorry, in Erie for Cam Gibson, but really has kind of slid. He just seems like kind of an organizational guy, just like, you know, a minor league depth type of player. And, sometimes those guys make their way to Toledo and can kind of hang on as guys that might, you know, be a 5A, 4A kind of player that you see it in and really at all sports. You see, you know, guys go from the Grand Rapids Griffins to the Red Wings and go back and forth a few times, even into their later 20s. So it's possible for those guys to kind of have a big career, but I don't think anyone's envisioning Cam Gibson as like a starting corner outfielder for the Tigers anytime down the road.
Yeah, the guy that, I don't know if you've seen him or not, but I haven't heard much at all about him this year, and he was the hot topic last September, and a lot of people wanted the Tigers to bring him up, but that's this Robson.
Yeah, Jacob Robson down in Toledo. He's the center fielder mostly, but gets along to the corners a little bit too because Daz Cameron's kind of doing both of those roles. He's a guy, if you pull up his stats, he's put up numbers in terms of, you know, 280 averages type of seasons. Not a lot of power, but a decent athlete. A guy who's you know, performed offensively consistently throughout his minor league career. But again, there's just not a lot about his game that screams major league talent. You know what I mean? I mean, when you talk about basketball, you got to have like an NBA skill. And I don't know that Jacob Robson has that MLB skill thing that really stands out about him. But yeah, like that, all that being said, as we watch the Tigers at the major league level struggle like they are right now, obviously, and especially in positions like center field with Jacoby Jones out, why not a Jacob Robson? Why not a Derek Hill? These guys that are, you know, advanced age, they're too old to be considered really good prospects at 24, 23 years old, maybe in Derek Hill's case. Why not give those guys a chance to see if they can make something happen at the major league level? Because with both of those guys, you're going to have to start having some Rule 5 considerations coming up, because they could be plucked from your minor league roster, which is something that, you know, as bad as the Tigers system has been for these past few decades, they haven't had to think about the Rule 5 draft because nobody wanted their prospects that were unprotected. But now, that's one of the parts about having a pretty good farm system, is that you'll have guys like that. You'll have guys like Anthony Castro, who's getting a little bit older too. Some guys might be Rule 5 unprotected if they're not picked up on the 40-man. So I would think with guys like Robson and Hill, you'd want to bring them up at some point and see what you got and see if they can maybe respond to the big league level, even if they aren't traditionally ready in the way that you normally think about prospects.
All right, I'm probably a little late on this one because it was a kind of a Pistons fan Twitter war thing earlier in the summer. But what are your thoughts on Carmelo Anthony, and is that a guy that fits the Pistons or would just be an awful fit for the Pistons?
I don't think it would be an awful fit. I just think that, you know, NBA front offices know a lot of stuff that we don't know. And we do know that Carmelo Anthony has obviously, you know, scored the basketball at a really high level throughout a long time. Obviously getting up there in years, was never really a defensive player, even when he was at peak physical condition for him. So, and obviously we know in Oklahoma City, how and even worse so in Houston, how he wasn't able to adapt and kind of embrace the role as a bench player, which those of us from the outside, that's got to be, it's impossible to kind of comprehend that a guy can't understand that he's too old to be an impact player out there and he's not, willing to take that bench role and play a few minutes and score for 15 minutes a game. But that's why we're not Carmelo Anthony. We just have different mindsets than these guys. We don't think that we're one of the five best basketball players in the world, even when it's clear that we're not. So you got to admire that competitiveness, but at the same time, it just hasn't worked in situations like that where you'd think that being around some veterans, being on a possible playoff contender type of team, would be beneficial for him. So I don't think Melo is really the answer for the Pistons, especially given the fact that you brought in, you know, a Markieff Morris and a Michael Beasley as kind of guys who have some history of success in the league, will be playing at a similar position, have the kind of prerequisite toughness that Detroit is looking for that Carmelo Anthony doesn't have. And I think the fact that you have pretty much one extra guy that you will be able to have on your roster this year already pretty much eliminates the fact that Carmelo could be coming to Detroit someday soon.
Yeah, it almost seems to me like if they did add Melo or another player like that, you could almost consider Detroit the NBA elephant's graveyard. Like everybody who used to be great comes here to die.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily what you want to be. You know, I mean, you don't want to say Johnny Unitas had an end of his career with someone, and Brett Favre with the Jets before he actually had some pretty good years with the Vikings. But yeah, you don't want to be known as that jersey of guys who, and the Pistons were that. You know, they had the Allen Iverson years. They had Tracy McGrady. There's been, you know, Joe Smith, you know, some former talents that they're tried to resuscitate the careers of. There's been those type of guys. And yeah, you don't necessarily want to get that rap. And sometimes those types of players work if you have championship-level teams that just need guys for 10 or 15 minutes. So if Carmelo Anthony is able to have some sort of final act in his career, I would envision it for more of those teams, like, you know, for instance, the L.A. Lakers, who are probably, you know, certainly a playoff team, possibly an NBA Finals contending team. I think that he could maybe work in a situation like that, especially given that he's friends with those guys, the LeBron James types, that could kind of steer them along and maybe keep them in check as far as the ego and everything like that.
All right, let's shift to the Lions. The score was closer, but the effort was kind of still blasé. They lose to Houston 30-23. I know it's only the preseason. David Fales, I thought, bounced back nicely. Had a much better game against Houston than he did against New England, but I think also he got sacked a lot less. But still no Matthew Stafford. And now it's got people going, is his back really okay, or are they just being overcautious here in the preseason?
Yeah, I mean, your guess is kind of as good as mine. There's certainly some red flags, and they took that basically an entire week off of throwing the ball, before the New England game and then leading up to going to the joint practices in Houston last week. So that certainly, to me, throws up red flags. And it's always like the second-year coach is doing some overcorrecting. And it's weird that Matt Patricia, a year ago, in year 10 for Matt Stafford, didn't think that he needed any kind of days off, given, of course, that he's been, banged up for several years now. And now, in year 11, he needs all sorts of days off and can't play the first two preseason games because they've done some joint practices with the team. So, I think we'll see. Certainly we'll see him play on Friday night, unless it is something serious coming up here against Buffalo. So I would expect Matthew Stafford to go out there. And, we can't let this team off the hook and say if they start off slow offensively that it's, the new offense and they're getting acclimated with all this stuff. Well, you had some good chances there to get acclimated with all the weapons. That's what preseason is for. And certainly the Lions have basically squandered these first 2 weeks of the preseason, discarded them like they're completely nothing. And that's a valid strategy and a valid viewpoint. But don't, miss me with the excuses of starting off slow this season, just like they did last year, if they're just going to kind of discard these games like they mean absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't say you have to play these guys a ton, but yeah, I would think you'd want to play them a little bit, A, so that they're not rusty, and B, yeah, if this is the new system that they got to go by, don't you want them to get out there and work out the kinks?
Yeah, I agree. And on the flip side of that, you get curious about the guys who play a lot more in a preseason game than you might expect kind of coming in. I'm having, flashbacks of Anthony Zettel last year, who we all kind of penciled in as one of the starting defensive ends opposite Ziggy Ansah, plays a lot in the preseason and then gets cut right before, when the cutdowns come unexpectedly. So if I'm a Romeo Okwara, and I'm not saying he's on the verge of getting cut, but it's strange that he's out there playing into the beginning of the third quarter at defensive end. I'm also looking at a guy like Jamal Agnew because, there's a lot of these names out there that we just kind of figure will make the 53-man roster for the Lions. And I think Jamal Agnew is one of those guys that we kind of pencil in, especially given his possibility of being an elite return man like he was in his rookie year 2 years ago when he made the Pro Bowl. But, man, he's getting a lot of reps out there in the secondary. And for a guy who, like I said, you would think is penciled in and not a rookie playing a new position or in a new scheme or anything like that, it kind of raises a little bit of an eyebrow when certain guys like that are out there playing more snaps in the preseason than you might think. So just something to keep an eye on for these next couple of games is not only who's not playing, but who's playing a lot as far as things that could ultimately be relevant for the way that the Lions come out of camp.
Everybody's got their lists. NFL.com's Dan Hanzus did the 32 NFL coaches and listed them in order of job security, and Matt Patricia did not do well. 29th of the 32 NFL coaches in terms of job security.
Yeah, I think that it would be tough to envision a world where he doesn't get that third year, and I'm not sitting here arguing and advocating for it. I'm just saying, when you make this kind of hire, because, if the Lions ever, another 6-10 year or possibly worse than that, or maybe a bleak 7 or something like that, obviously the sharp knives of the fans are going to start coming out wanting to get Patricia out of here. But I think that because Patricia and Bob Quinn are probably a package deal as far as the day that the franchise might choose to go in a new direction, I just think that Bob Quinn and Patricia probably just kind of get that extra year to kind of show that they are not up to the job. It'd just be tough to do the culture change like they just did with Patricia and let go of it after just two seasons. It's been done before, and it could be done again, but with the history of the Lions and with how Matt Millen, you know, was able to survive his disasters for as long as he did, that I would just kind of believe that third year is probably going to be pretty safe for Patricia.
Yeah, and I just, because it is the Fords, and I know Martha's trying to act stronger than her husband, but I don't see them making a change right now. That just doesn't look good for them.
Yeah, and kind of funny that we're, you know, a couple weeks away from week one of the regular season, and we're having conversations about will they fire the coach after the season, as opposed to the eternal optimism that, you know, most seasons of any sport, of any team that you root for or that you follow, that could be out there. But I guess that's life of a Detroit sports fan these days.
Well,
right?
It just doesn't seem like to me, especially the Lions, they don't ever seem to seize the moment, no matter what it is. They don't seize the moment in the preseason of getting you hyped about the new offense and that things are going to be better in year two. They don't seize the moment in the playoffs and win a big playoff game. They just don't ever seem to seize the damn moment unless it's meaningless and they win on a Monday night early in the season when it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, and that's pretty much the, you know, we all know that NFL football games, half of them come down to, what, six or seven plays, and it seems like that those are never really made by the Lions on a consistent fashion, and if it's not one thing, it's the other, and that's just life of what it's like in the last. But I will say, though, that I thought that, you know, the Mike Daniels move and that signing in the training camp was a little bit unlike the Lions, and I mean that in a positive way, because a free agent became available in a surprise cut that was going to cost a lot of money, and they went out and made it happen. So I thought that was, you know, maybe an indicative that this team is kind of ready to try to push some chips into the middle of the table this year. And again, without seeing Stafford in any kind of meaningful action, without seeing any of these defensive linemen, save for, you know, A'shaun Robinson being out there on Saturday night, those are kind of the two things, right? I mean, if you believe the Lions are going to be pretty good, it's got to be a big bounce back year for Stafford, and that defensive line has to be, you know, either dominant or just short of dominant. And we don't know anything about those groups right now, and we'll see. But like you said, hard to believe as a Lions fan for all these years that things are going to turn out on the positive end.
Yeah. All right, Matt, tell them about the podcast.
Yeah, Locked On Pistons. It's on iTunes. It's on anywhere you can get podcasts. And we're doing all sorts of good stuff to get to training camp coming up soon. And, you can check that out every day.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Thanks, Dennis. Talk to you soon.
All right. There's Matt Shook joining us as he does every week here on the Dennis Stuckey Show. And he's always got good stuff for us. Take a break, and we'll be back in just a bit. Don't go away.